Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook told me that they didn't like the way that I was commenting about how they were doing it wrong with, you know, truth and evidence and stuff that just made no sense and calling them out on it. And why would I do something like that? Because they're doing it the way that they want to, and the way that I want to is wrong because I'm not them. Bleh, wah. Plus, part of the reason for doing this is to go through the old adage of sometimes the journey is more impressive than the destination. I am known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. You can find me on G+, Twitter, Facebook, pretty much anywhere you go looking for me. I was born into a Roman Catholic family in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island. I now live outside of Buffalo, New York, and I am an unabashed atheist. Joining on the roundtable tonight is, as soon as I get my pointer over there, Dallin.
Good evening, folks. Online, I'm known as Dallin. I was raised in northern Canada, born to a Lutheran family with, I guess you could say, a bit of a twist in that in my household, religion was never a very important thing. My parents always encouraged me to keep an open mind, always ask questions, and never stop learning. This has helped me a lot in my travels over the years. And as far as things like atheism, loss of faith, and all that stuff went, I took a pretty much arm's length approach to it up until just recently when I started seeing the actual damage fundamentalists were doing to society in general, at which point I decided it was time to take up the sword of reason and throw in with the non-believers.
Also tonight, Unrenowned Tech.
Hi, folks. I'm UT. I was raised in a mixed religious background, even studied and practiced other religions. After many years, I came to the realization that I don't believe any of this shit. In fact, much of it's actually quite toxic. So I'm an atheist, but I'm also partially anti-theist.
Also, Joseph.
Evening, folks. Name's Joe. Born in Chicago to a Irish Roman Catholic family. Served 8 years in the military. Now stuck in Pittsburgh as a penniless, jobless graphic designer and an atheist.
And especially joining us this evening is Heretic Woman. Thank you for joining us, hon.
You're very welcome. So I hail from Southern Ontario. Been here all my life. Started out in the United Church of Canada, which is probably one of the most liberal denominations. But when I was 13, I got suckered into joining a lovely Calvinist sect by a friend. Yeah, that was fun. But I figured it out by about 17, and I have been an atheist for 25 years now. And I also would say that I am anti-theism. I think religion is quite toxic, and I don't really find much redeeming about it. And I just recently, kind of like Dallin, decided that, you know, because I live in a happy bubble where nobody really cares about religion, but it's time that I care about religion and start speaking up about it.
Of course, all of you who are watching this evening, thank you very much for your time and hanging out with us. If you would like to take advantage of the question and answer system here on the Google Hangout that is available for you, as always, feel free to leave us questions, comments, anything you'd like us to tackle this evening, and we can see what we can do with that. Additionally, if you would like to send a voicemail message or a text message, we do have a phone line open for that. I cannot accept live phone calls at this time, but we're working on that. The phone number for that is area 859 HCTV 554. Yes, there's actually a whole bunch of reasoning behind most of the numbers, which we'll go into another time. Bogey, of course, thank you very much for chiming in. We appreciate it. And Chris, also, we see you over there. And Chiyote Cheetah, I see you, hon. Thanks for hanging out. It is the 26th of October. It is coming up onto Halloween. It is cold for a lot of us. So, you know, if you're hanging out with us, thank you very much. The topic tonight is something that actually touches to a lot of people, not the least of which is somebody who's not on the show with us just yet, who is Cash from Atheists on Air. The invitation is out there for him, and he may or may not show up, probably not. But this topic is actually very much directed for him, especially. Ashley, who had been on prior, I have not heard from at the moment, which, you know, okay. Hopefully she will be joining us, but we will see about that a little bit later. Meantime, as our usual, I'm going to go ahead and kick us off the five-minute freestyle, which is, with apologies to Heath and Wright, 5 minutes on the clock. We'll get started. Now, as I've mentioned on a couple of past shows, I don't typically try to think about what I'm going to talk about for these 5 minutes, because I actually do want it to be, you know, just 5 minutes of me trying to figure my way through and really think really hard about whatever the topic is going to be that I'm going to do. But I ended up having something that's different. I actually decided to change around a couple of podcasts that I'm listening to. I dropped off of one because it's been too difficult for me to go through. And maybe I'll talk about that a little bit later. But I picked up Atheist on Air. Sorry. Barroom Atheist. I'm trying to keep these guys straight. Because I had mentioned about them, they were on Cognitive Dissonance recently. So I decided, you know what? The way that they were describing their show, why the heck not? So I started picking up, and I decided that since I was picking up Dallin's podcast novel again to kind of catch up on it, that I would listen to Bill and Susie and try to figure out, you know, what it is that they were talking through. And their design of doing stuff is really, really nice because it's thinking through stuff, learning stuff, going through and a better understanding, which is part of what I've really wanted to do with this show. And we had talked about a long time ago at this point, or so it feels like, with Heath and Lucinda and Noah from Scathing Atheist about various tropes. And there's a trope that's come up on many an occasion that we've heard. It, the question of, can God make a rock so heavy that even he can't lift it? And that came running through my head for some reason while I was listening to Barroom Atheist. And I've come up with an interesting question and a possible solution to the problem of evil, because I was listening to them talk about it on Barroom Atheist. And I've come up with a really, really interesting take on this, one that might even sway me to the maybe category for is there a God? Now, this is going to take a little bit of a weird twist in logic, so just bear with me for a second. They were talking about Genesis, where God, apparently, the creator of all, has some problems in cognition, doesn't know where Adam and Eve are, although she doesn't have a name at that point, after the biting of the apple. They hid themselves, and God didn't know where they were, so had to go asking for them. Later on, God needs to try to question, will you kill your son to show that you love me? And then later, well, maybe this guy really does love me so much, and, well, you know what, God, you know, he's got a good life, but if you take everything away from him, maybe he won't love you so much. You know what, that's a good question. Let's go ahead and test that. There's a lot of times in the Bible where we find out that God has cognition problems, has real question marks about how much does he really know about what's going on. So I wrote down a possible explanation for, is this real or not? And it falls on the idea of, can God create a rock so heavy that even he can't lift it. Here's the question. Can God make a universe in which even he doesn't know what will happen in it? Now, I don't know that this is, even makes any kind of sense, but if you think about it, if you created a universe, you would know all of the parameters of it. You would know all of what would happen with it, all of the interactions with all of the nuclear forces, all of the pieces that go into atoms and molecules, and even the vibrations, possibly in multiple 11-plus dimensions that would necessitate the reality as what we see at this time. So the question is it possible that God may have actually created this universe with the complete idea that even he doesn't know, from an absolute chance level, an absolute random chaotic level, doesn't know what is going to happen in it? Now, if you take that question and you kind of try to piece it into the idea of, can a rock be made that even he can't lift? Maybe there's something to this whole Bible thing. Maybe there actually is a rational reason why God acts the way that he does. Or maybe this is just mental masturbation, and the whole thing just doesn't mean jack shit. Let's see. Maybe we'll be able to figure that out a little bit later. Which one makes more sense to you? This is episode number 39. Now, as I've put into the intro for the show, I would normally be making a Jack Benny reference of some kind, which at this point is kind of meta because I'm not, but yet I am. There's a story behind it, and you look up Jack Benny, you'll find out what it is. As a reminder, our next scheduled show is the next Power of 10, which is tentatively going to be labeled Double Double because it's episode 40. Every 10 episodes, we go through for a very non-safe-for-work topic, and we're going to see about inviting folks to be on the show with us. So if you are normally just a viewer and you would like to join us, please send me an email message at shujintribble@gmail.com. Put in it, holy crap, and ask to be on, and we'll see about inviting you on to be a video panelist with us. And we'll see what we're going to talk about. At this point, I have no idea what topic we might have. Probably won't have a topic, and we'll just cover whatever comes up. However, the topic for tonight is the dangers of the dissenting opinion. And this is something that works both ways. It's dangerous for the people who are on the fringe. It's dangerous for the people who are in the majority, too. And we're going to explore that a lot, because there are a lot of pieces to this. So for right at the moment, I'm going to start off with you, Heretic Woman, because you more than anybody else on this panel know full well when things happened with Cash from Atheists on Air. Mm-hmm. You were one of the people that worked on a fan cast temporarily because he was out of it. So, from that angle, what happened with Cash? Why was there a fan cast? Why were you involved with that? Why do you wear that mask, Kimosabe?
Well, basically, as far as Cash goes, life kind of blew up in his face. And, you know, we all knew he moved recently, and I don't know a lot of details, but I just know that it became really impossible for him to do the show as he had been doing it, and he wasn't able to do anything. It was 2 weeks now that he wasn't able to go on. And the first week that he canceled the show, we have a closed Facebook group for the show, and some of us were chatting in there, and I just kind of said, well, because people were saying, no, we can't, we need a show because that's like my weekly sanity. There are people that, you know, live in the heart of the Bible Belt and they have to listen to crap all the time. And they're like, no, I need something. And I just kind of said, well, you know, just because cash isn't available doesn't mean we can't kind of have our own little hangout. And so, yeah, some people said, hey, yeah, that'd be cool. So the first time around, it was about five or six of us that just got together in a private hangout just to have a bit of rational time together and talk about stuff that we felt like talking about. And so that was good. You know, we thought, well, maybe, you know, in the future, if something happens, we can fall back on that. Well, then the second week came around, and that's when Cash made his announcement that, hey, you know, life is really got me and we don't know what's going to happen. I just realized that I can't continue the way I have been continuing, etc. And of course, everybody kind of freaked out and was like, oh no, like, because he never said that he was going to leave the show or anything, but that was always sort of in the back of people's minds. And so a friend of mine, David Foda, who some of you may have heard of, and he's kind of a regular on Atheists on Air too. And another friend of mine, Beth, who has gone by Dune before, she's been on AOA a number of times as well. And the three of us just kind of got together and got talking. And originally, after the first sort of informal thing we did, we thought, hey, we could do like an after show, an after party kind of thing. You know, we've been exploring that. Well, when this happened and Cash said, you know, no show again, we thought, oh, what the hey, you know, we'll just put something out there and so people have something to listen to. So the three of us just got together and we broadcast a show and we had fun and we had a few people watch, and so far there's been over 60 views on YouTube, so that's kind of cool. So, yeah, that's what was up with that. And as far as the mask goes, in real life, I am out as an atheist. As I said, I've been an atheist for 25 years. Anybody that's known me since high school knows that I'm an atheist. However, because I want to become more active in the community and I really have started speaking out against religion, it just, there's things involved with work and that kind of thing where me being all over the internet going, you know, Jesus is crap and, you know, Islam is ridiculous and whatever, I could get into a little trouble. So for that reason, I do not broadcast my face or my actual name. And you alluded to the issues with Facebook, because I did create a heathen Facebook account, and they have since forced me to use a name that is legal, but not one that I use in real life. So that's kind of been a pain lately as well.
Yeah, that's something that's going to be all kinds of fun trying to figure through. I'm not quite sure where we're going to end up with this. Joe, I'm going to pick up with you at this point. For someone who had your experience, you had your time in the military, which is very, very regimented, very structured, no pun intended for that. But for somebody to look at a situation, a subordinate to come through and say, hey, look, something's not right. I don't think this is the right way to be doing this. That's not something that's really smiled upon, I would assume.
Well, it all depends on the situation, but in some respects, you are very much correct. Also, namely, it depends on who you are as far as your rank goes, who you are as far as your position goes. You know, the two are different, rank and position, very different. But it also depends on who exactly you're speaking to. For example, if you're at a ops meeting with your general, with your command staff, and you bring something up, it could be taken one way or another. It's more or less at the discretion of the individuals, you know, at the top in that room at that time. But speaking from experience, you know, with the wrong individual in that room, it can be very difficult. And even more so when you realize, well, maybe I was right, but you can't say anything about it.
Which is, of course, you know, it can be viewed as being very childish. It, even mentioning, hey, you know, well, I knew about this, but...
Well, not to speak like a fucking drone here. Sorry. Okay. Not to speak like a drone, but when casualties are involved, one can only imagine, you know, had they listened to myself or this other person who had an opinion on it, would things have been different? And you see that even for those who don't have military experience, you see that all over in the media when, you know, dealing with military situations, you know, books, movies, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, it's more than just cause for drama on your silver screen. But,
okay.
I honestly have no idea where I was going with that.
Okay. That's the thing about live TV, man. You never know what's going to happen sometimes.
TV. When are we on TV?
It's close. It's veto presentation. Let it go. Okay. Tech, I'm coming on over to you because you've had a couple of different upbringings, like you'd mentioned. You've gone through a couple of different religious backgrounds, and Judaism was one of them. And you know, those of us who've watched for a little while know that one full well. That is 10% maybe of what most areas here in the U.S. would be. That kind of put you on the outside for a lot of folks, didn't it?
Yeah, growing up, when I lived in New York, first off, I want to explain to some people that there's a difference between being a Jew in terms of culture versus mm-hmm. being a Jew in terms of religion. Mm-hmm. Okay, there actually is a difference. There's a heritage behind Judaism, and you don't have to be a practicing Jew to still be a Jew. My mother is Jewish, which automatically in the mindset of definitely the Orthodox and as well as many Reformed Jewish communities automatically makes her children, namely myself and my sister, automatically Jewish.
And I hate
regardless
to,
of whether or not we renounce it, okay? And I have renounced it.
Deck, I hate to do this to you, but she doesn't look it.
Oh. You've never seen my mother. You've never seen my mother. Oh, the movie. Okay, never mind. Anyway,
I cannot believe you went there.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, Barf was awesome.
Welcome.
Point being, whether you're practicing Jew or not, there's definitely groups out there that hate the Jewish community, like KKK, for example.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the KKK, it's all about white supremacy, purity of bloodlines, things like that. So even if somebody like me came along to the KKK and said, hey, listen, I want to join, I've renounced my Jewish faith, they would look at me and go, yeah, it doesn't matter, you're not coming in here because, you know, your mother was a Jew. You're always going to be a Jew. And so that can put you in harm's way just by being born into a particular background. It can also lock you into a series of mindsets just how you live your life, like Islam. My understanding is that certain Muslim cultures, if one of your two particular parents is a Muslim, that automatically makes you a Muslim, whether you believe in Islam or not. And therefore that if you speak out against Islam, it automatically makes you an apostate, even if you don't practice the religion. So, yeah, being a Jew growing up as a kid was definitely a little bit different. We were the minority in the neighborhood, in the county specifically, where I grew up. And there wasn't a lot of active racism. There was a lot of silent racism, which, if anybody's ever experienced it, can be just as bad as the outspoken. At least with the outspoken, you know what you're getting. And with the silent, you never know what's going to happen. Being an atheist, I think there's actually more atheists than Jews in the country. So now I'm part of a larger minority group than I was before.
which is a piece that we're gonna end up hitting on also, because there's a piece about that. Please forgive me. I'm also getting a couple of items from a couple of different areas too, so I'm kind of checking back and forth. Dallin, you are not the token Canadian, and I'm saying that for a reason on this, because you are Canadian, yes, but you have been friends, acquaintances with us for quite a long time at this point. For you, you get to see things on a very different angle, with the culture for Canada. In a lot of ways, in a lot of respects, I've heard people have described it as what America could have, should have, may have been, as far as to overall dealing with each other. So for you to see how we interact with each other, seeing the news, how it just inundates you guys, on your side of the border, I don't suppose that there is quite nearly as much cultural animosities back and forth as what we see on our side. Like was mentioned, the Jewish peoples not being accepted, being given the silent treatment, or even outright hostility from groups like the KKK and such. I don't hear much coming from your side because, well, we have a bias, of course, on our side for our own, but you, for where you are up there, Calgary and such, best of my knowledge, I don't think that there is nearly that kind of animosity or shunning and such, even with the Indigenous folk. No?
There, it really does vary region to region. And yeah, while you know that you guys have the KKK down there, we do have a couple of white supremacist groups up here, but they're very quiet. You don't hear about them a lot, like in the news or anything like that. No, and like when I was growing up, I was not part of any one minority. In fact, I was part of, you could say, the majority. I actually did go to school with a few kids. As far as I remember, there were three families back home who were Jehovah's Witness. Hmm. And I, for the life of me, could not figure them out. Now, when I was in school, and we're going back a few years here, so the custom was in the morning you would stand up for the national anthem, there would be the Lord's Prayer, and I remember in grade 5, one of the teachers would whip out the Bible and actually read parts of it. We went through Psalms, we went through Proverbs. I think the last one I remember was we went through the book of Exodus.
Okay, now before you get any much further on this one, mm-hmm. I do, forgive me, like I said, I'm running like four different things that I'm checking around. Uh-huh. Did you mention, was it a private or public schooling?
This was a public school, but keep in mind, we are talking early 80s, you know, before a lot of what we see these days popped up. I mean, plus a small town, relatively speaking, I mean, it was a few thousand people, but, you know, compared to some of the cities we all live in, that is a small town. But I can also show you small towns in the middle of the province of Saskatchewan where literally you blink, you miss it. Like they are just a gas station on the highway, and that's about all you see. To my point, when the rest of the class stood up for the national anthem, these two or three kids would actually get up and walk out of the classroom. and wouldn't come back until after the Bible reading was done. And I remember asking, I turned to somebody and I asked, like, what the hell? Well, you know, as close to what the hell as a grade fiver gets back then.
What's up?
Yeah.
Almost.
And what the person told me was, they said, oh, they don't believe in God. I'm like, wait, what? Now, again, I led a fairly sheltered life. So I did some digging around, asked a few questions, found out, you know, that they were JWs, and I started watching them afterwards and watched how other people treated them. And what I did see, I found a little revolting. Now, a lot of times when you hear the term dissenting voices, you think about people leaving the Mormon faith, people leaving the Jehovah's Witness, people trying to get out of whatever religious institution they're in. In this case, the dissenting voice was against the majority, which was largely Christian. And I'm talking Catholic, Lutheran, Anglican, Pentecostal.
Judeo-Christian system.
Yeah, without the Judeo, because as far as I know, there were no Jews back home where I was growing up. There were a few misers that could have been mistaken for them, but that's another story entirely.
Well, I will clue you in that back in the 80s, a lot of them were very silent about their religion.
Okay, that's a fair point. But I did notice how the kids interacted and how the adults interacted. I picked up on a few things. And they, even though, yeah, there was a Kingdom Hall in the town, which told me there were more than just three families who were practicing, I don't think they were very well received by most of the people, just because they acted differently. They didn't celebrate Christmas. They didn't even celebrate Halloween. And of course, a small town where it's not so much the religion, but the custom. Like, it's where you blur that line between religion and culture. And if you're not actively participating in the culture, you kind of get the stink eye when people look at you.
That is a huge piece.
That's called silent racism, that stink eye effect.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and I will admit, I was guilty of a lot of that silent racism because, again, I found them, well, they were different. And, of course, growing up, different was bad. Hell, when I found out there was another family and I heard about all these customs that the women couldn't cut their hair, the men had to keep their hair short. I think there was no TV, none of, just a whole bunch of restrictions. And I just thought, why the hell would you impose something like that? And of course, it wasn't until I, you know, got into the more rational movement that I found out that these were actually all tenets of Pentecostals. So what I found out is that this family was Pentecostals. And for the record, I never did hear them speak in tongues.
That's not all Pentecostals.
Yeah, and I'm kind of grateful this one wasn't, because one of them married my sister, and my oldest niece is the product of that marriage, which only lasted a couple of years. But
yeah, that can kind of give you a little bit of a problem child, because, so to speak.
Yeah, as sort of getting back to your point, though, Susan, I forgive me for rambling. I do that a lot. As far as where I live now, out west here, it is a very multicultural place. I mean, there's a shopping mall up in the Northeast. We actually call it the UN because of how multicultural it is.
Sounds like Bethesda, Maryland here.
Well, it's getting to the point where you do see a lot of East Indian, a lot of Oriental, a lot of Middle East coming up. I've met an awful lot of people from places like Pakistan. I've met a couple of Iranians. I work with several Muslims. Thankfully, they keep all of that on the down low to the point where it is a strict Q&A. If you have a question about the culture or about the religion, they will answer it.
You know, I actually worked with a Muslim who was like that. He was not afraid to answer questions about his faith,
yeah.
But he never tried to push it on anybody. He always had an explanation of how his system worked.
Yeah.
But he never once tried to convince anybody that his was right over everybody else's. And I give him a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, well, there was one guy that I worked with. He was actually a project manager. and he was actually on the first team when we went to the States for the first time. In the buckle of the Bible Belt, there we were,
geez.
A couple of white guys and one Muslim, and we are in a steakhouse.
There's a joke there somewhere.
we are in a steakhouse. Some of us are having ribs. Some of us are having steak. I think he didn't have fish. But the question came up with him, like, what is it with, why the pork thing? And he actually came up with, at the time, with what was an rational explanation. So that, okay. And it's because, you know, back
in
the day.
Do you remember what his was?
I believe it had something to do with the fact that pigs stereotypically roll around on their own filth. And I think the other explanation was when this law, if you will, came out, there was no cooking that kind of meat. There was no way to cook it cleanly like you have today.
See, right there, that's a lot like the Reformed Jewish community that does eat pork now. And they had the same opinion. And the Muslim guy that I was talking to, his was similar to yours in that it rolled around in its own filth, and whatever you eat goes into your body and becomes your body. Therefore, if you eat filth, you become filth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see that with a lot of you see that kind of resonance with a lot of tenets of the older religions that are mm-hmm. currently around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, before I get us a little bit further into this, and please forgive me, it's just I want to really get into this because there's a really, really, really thick piece about all of this that I really need to hit to really tie all this whole thing together.
He needs to hit it.
By the way, did get a one of the questions and one of the comments that was coming up from Joy, who's over here on the Q&A, and I gotta kind of squirm around on this one a little bit. She writes, "Have you all, as not having an organized religion, made some kind of family traditions for your kids if you have them?"
Yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. For instance, in my particular case, even though we are secular humanist, atheist, whatever, non-deity believing group over here, we're gonna go have fun for Halloween over at a friend's house, help out with a haunted thing so that we scare the hell out of kids. Birthdays, Christmas, you know, we have traditions, we get together. I don't think any one of us doesn't have at least, well, no, wait a second. I have. Tech, I know that you've got your guy. You guys get together and you...
Not for Halloween or Thanksgiving.
No, but I mean,
we do have the winter break together.
Yeah. And Heretic, I don't remember off the top of my head if you have or what parts you might want to share.
No kids. Not something I was really interested in. But I still go hang out with the family on some of those occasions. My husband's family is quite religious, so we end up having to go show up for that stuff. In fact, next weekend I must go to church for his mother's birthday. Really looking forward to that.
Could be. It could be worse. Hey, think of it this way. It's at a church where everybody is alive instead of in a room with a little piece of machinery that's going beep, beep.
Yeah. On the upside, the very next day, I get to go to the non-conference in Toronto, which is the first secular conference in the area ever. So, yeah, it's kind of...
Wow, talk about a flip-flop.
You're telling me. I wanted to say something, though, what Dallin was saying about having the JW kids in class. I remember some in class, too, in early grade school, which actually was the 70s, but there were some that, yeah, they would get up and leave in the morning. We actually did the Lord's Prayer in class back then, no Bible stuff, but we did the Lord's Prayer. And I remember them having to leave, and they just explained that, well, yeah, they're Jehovah's Witness people, and they don't believe in singing the national anthem. And we all kind of went, okay. In fact, a lot of us said, lucky them. They don't have to listen to this crap. They get to go out in the hall. And another thing in where I grew up, we had a number of Mennonite families in the area. And I actually went to school with a number of Mennonite girls. There weren't any boys that I remember, but there were a number of girls. And they wore the pigtails and the patterned dresses and all of that. Some of them had no electricity, some of them did, and it was just kind of like, oh, well, they're different, but whatever, let's go play recess. It never really was, and I mean, I'm from a long line of rednecks, and this was, you know, redneck farm school, and nobody really seemed to care too much, strangely, but
that works out perfect. Thank you. Believe it or not, you actually gave me the segue that I needed. Rednecks. Goddamn rednecks. Which we love cash. Now, I know full well that some folks have been familiarized with cash from Atheists on Air. Some of you have not. If you have not had the opportunity of getting to see him, he is on, I forget which episode it was. I believe it was with us, episode 19. I could be wrong with that. The title
the
on it was
episode where I fell asleep.
It was, but it was also the episode titled PSAs, when we were talking after Matt Dillahunty having his I don't want to call it a debate, his discussion with Saitama.
I don't know, Matt really Dillahunty had a debate. The other guy preached.
Yeah. But bottom line, Cash is a wonderful guy. Cash is a wonderful individual, wonderful human being. And what happened to him is a good portion of what brought this all on. And also what happened with you, Heretic. Cash had put up I don't want to call it fake. He put up a pseudonymed webpage on a Facebook page so that he could do Atheists on Air without revealing his true identity, kind of the same way that I have mine with Shujin Tribble. Obviously, it is not my real name, and I am not going to use it directly, although it's relatively easy enough to figure out who I am with a little bit of work, a minor amount of work. In Cash's case, and he has said this on his show before, he had accidentally not double-checked, not triple-checked, which Facebook account he was logged into at the time and had cross-posted an atheist-specific message to his professional / personal Facebook account. And it cost him. Heretic, you are nodding over there. Do you? I forget exactly what it was that he said.
I think it was at least 10 customers. No, I think it was worse than that.
No, it was 1,000.
That's right. It was huge. It was a huge problem.
Yeah. Now, we don't know what Cash's real name is. Don't want to. We don't know what Cash's real life work is. Don't want to. Don't need to. What we care about is, again, the whole purpose of this show. Why? Why did this happen? Why did people, 1,000 people out of, let's assume that it's 1%. That's a pretty big number if you think about it. if you consider that maybe he might have 100,000 people that friended him, liked him on Facebook. Not real likely because of the way that it's set up, but just humor me for a second. 1,000 people is a big number, no matter how you slice it. Even if you've got 10 million people that are following you because you have some incredible product, 1,000 people en masse in one big blip, that's a big thing. You take notice of something like that happening. So now the big question is, when you are the little fish in a big pond, and non-believers, atheists by name, make up maybe 10% of the U.S. population, where Christians make up 70, 75-ish.
Well, last count about a year or two ago by the Gallup poll was roughly 75, between 75 and 80% of the U.S. population, some variant of Christian or Catholicism. So that's Protestant and Baptist and Methodist, all those rolled into one.
All right. So,
whereas agnostic and or atheism rolled into one equals roughly about the 10, maybe 12%.
Okay.
That was the last time I read an article on it, and that number was a year or two old.
Currently, I can't see when the okay.
That I can't was actually see. Old. He took the sunglasses off.
Bite me.
Where?
Assuming these numbers have changed, you're looking at about 78.4% are among adults are Christians. 4.7 are considered other. This includes, you know, Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu, a few others. And then you have 16.1% who are unaffiliated. That's atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular. Hmm. And then you have the 0.8% that say don't know or refuse to comment.
Okay. Actually, that number does sound fairly recent. I can't remember what podcast I was listening to. It could have been The Thinking Atheist, where hitting a number that was above 10% for people in the United States being considered atheist, agnostic, etc., that was a huge milestone, and that, as far as I know, was recent.
So that's like when you go to vote for a president and you have 10% of the vote go towards an independent. That is noticeable number.
Yeah, it's true enough. That starts to, I mean, you know, a billion here, a billion there, suddenly you're talking about real numbers.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. When you're dealing with a group who is much the minority, 15%. Let's just use 15% just as a rough figured number here for a second, because I want to make it easy numbers. If you're talking about 15% versus 85%, obviously you don't have a lot of sway. You don't have a lot of voice by its simple math. You get drowned out very easily, very quickly, just by sheer numbers alone. And that's not even if you count how much of a percent of that percent is active or outspoken or doing anything other than just sitting back and going, yeah, it's okay. You fight the fight for me.
Hold on. For our viewers, to put it in a really simple perspective, imagine one adult and one child standing up in a classroom of 10 people, 9 adults and 2 children, one adult and one child standing up and going, I don't believe in God. And then you have 8 adults and one child going, you need to shut up and sit down. What's going to happen to those two?
Yeah, it's very easy for that to have happened. Jennifer Alquist is one of those voices that is very familiar to those of us in the non-believing category. Jennifer Alquist, I forget where she was off the top of my head, but she was a high school girl who went ahead bucking against the system to say, look, religion in my public school is not supposed to be crossing over. we got federal regs. We've got stuff that says it's not supposed to be happening that way. And she was one young lady in a high school with all the pressures and stuff that go along with it. And she had to stand up against an entire town, including her state's governor, if I remember right, describing her as, quote, that little evil thing, if I'm remembering the quote quite correctly.
So taking into account possible demographics, since I've attended both small town schools and big town schools, you're looking at a rough estimate of standing up one young lady standing up to roughly about 100 and 150 students of the student body, which could expand depending on the population of the area, as well as counting in anywhere from 200 to 300 adults, not counting the governmental body that's trying to slap her down as well and spreading out that information to its, you know, let more adults know, hey, listen, you got to come over here and support our religion in the school system. So you're talking about a lot of people that this one young lady's standing up to, just to enforce the law.
Yeah. Now, there's a reason why I wanted to couch a lot of this to open with religion. And I know that there is at least one person that's chiming in right now who I understand. I understand where your concern is, that I'm specifically steering this inside of the religious bubble for now. There's a reason for it, and let me explain. And you guys want to add on to this afterwards, please, by all means, feel free. Religious affiliation is, by its nature, and I'm saying this is a blanket statement, and it might bite me in the ass for it later, but typically, by its nature, religious affiliation is you are part of my group, or you are everyone else. There is a binding agent with religious affiliations that is I'm not quite sure what the word is that I'm looking for.
Polarizing
is probably the best word that I can think of off the top of my head. Yes, because you and your group are very close together, and everyone else is their own group. More specifically, not your group.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Yes. Now, the reason why I wanted to do that was for the same reason why we ended up talking about dogma a couple of weeks ago. Because the stuff that we're dealing with here isn't isolated to religious affiliation. And forgive me for couching it and all that. It's the easiest one that we can all recognize when we finally look at it from higher up on top of it all. The dogmatic ideas that you are part of my group, good. You are not part of my group, bad. That dichotomy is a real, real problem child, and that's where a lot of this comes out. That's why I wanted to bring Jennifer Alquist, even though it was a religious thing, she was standing up to the peer pressure of a larger group, her classroom, her school, her governor looking down at her and saying, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. That's where this all comes from. This is the reason why I wanted to couch it this way first, to make sure that everybody was rooted in, I've seen this. Because this is something that happens with, well, I'm a product of the 60s and the 70s and the early 80s. The blacks and whites. Or the Mexicans and the whites. Or the browns and the Europeans. Or the name whatever group. The Irish and the Italians in New York City coming out of Ellis Island. You know, there was always the, you're not part of my group. You're some other group. You are not good enough. Until people finally just hang back and said, you know what, they're not so bad. Heretic woman, real quick, because you are on the east side of Canada, I know full well that you guys have had the, what is it called, the First Peoples?
First Nations, usually.
First Nations, okay. For you guys up your side, we had, in the U.S., we had a long and bloody and in a lot of ways really bad relationship with the indigenous North Americans, the American Indians, whatever terminology you want to call it, the people who were here first, who were going, what do you mean you discovered it? We knew it was here. This is home. for you guys on your side of it all, from what you remember, what was the historical side of it, and what is it like for the interactions with you guys now?
We have reservations, and I think we kind of ended up doing, and we have a bad problem with this, but hey, look, America did that, we should do it too, kind of thing. I don't recall historically there being quite the same kind of conflict that you guys had. And remember, Canada was kind of formed as a business. We didn't have that whole like, hey, we need independence. We're like, yeah, you know, we're the Hudson's Bay Company, basically.
Yeah, but, for you guys, when it finally came down to it, you guys basically said, hi, could we have like our own country name and affiliation and everything? Oh, thank you, appreciate that.
Yeah, and they kind of said, oh, well, yeah, I guess so, sure, and that was it, kind of thing. But, I mean, as I say, I know that there were conflicts with, I guess the correct term is Aboriginal peoples, and but just not quite as bad as you guys maybe did down there. We have a lot of problems right now with Indigenous people, and Dallin will be aware of that as well. The reservations are just in horrible areas of the country. They're usually up very far north. The land is bad, the weather is bad, and they don't have anything to do. And so the problem that we're having is just widespread drug use. If they can't get drugs, they're huffing gasoline. From like they'll go to the gas station, buy a container, and they'll huff it, or spray paint, or anything like that. Yeah. Suicide is terrible. Families are disintegrating. Family violence is rampant. Sexual abuse is rampant. But it's more so like the high further north you go, and a lot of the eastern reservations have that problem. Interestingly, my stepsister was married to a Native man for a number of years. They aren't anymore, but my sister still lives close to a reservation up north, an area called Kirkland Lake. And she actually works for the First Nations. She works in the band office up there, and she's really acclimated to that culture. And in their particular area, things aren't nearly quite that bad at all. They have problems like anywhere, but it's nowhere near as bad. But I know in recent years, some of the northern communities, they've been talking about, they've evacuated some of the youth because they're all just, you know, destroying themselves. And they're talking about relocating entire communities to try and get something better going. It's just really, it just historically was never handled well. And we also have a rather checkered history with something called residential schools, which I think, I don't know if you guys had them down there, but they were religious based. They would literally steal children from these tribes and take them to a residential school and try and force them to be Christian.
Yeah.
And
religious schools here in the U.S. are basically privatized schools that are not funded by the government.
Well, no, wait a minute. What she's talking about is a very different animal. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Dallin, I want to bring you in on that point because you look like you know about this one also, and probably having some experience on the West Side.
Well, growing up, I was actually more central. I was actually closer to the East than I was to the West. But it does hit a little close to home because specifically, the church that created these residential schools was Anglican, and I was married into an Anglican family for about 10 years. I'm now 4 years sober. Thank you very much. Anyways, but no, there was a lot of talk of the abuse that went on because, well, like Heretic Woman said, they were trying to turn them away from their culture and forcing them to mold into, you know, what was becoming the dominant culture and the dominant religion and all of that. Mm-hmm. Where I grew up, there still is a reservation very close to there. And alcoholism is rampant. Drug use is rampant. Their weapon of choice actually is Lysol. Believe me, there's a lot of it.
I've heard of stuff like that.
Did you mean to say weapon, or did you mean to say drug?
Drug / weapon of choice. And actually, it is a weapon because it completely fries your brain.
Yeah, it's huffing is what it is.
Yeah. But yeah, growing up.
When you say weapon, I imagine somebody coming out with a can of Lysol trying to attack somebody with it.
No, because it's too valuable for them. Because they would sooner huff it than use it as a weapon.
As a matter of fact, I'm gonna touch on that in a couple moments. Also,
suddenly I'm picturing the cleaning lady from Family Guy.
Yeah. But to my point, out here in the West, we are we are one of the richer provinces now because of oil. How long that stays, I'm not sure, just given what I've seen lately. But we have a real spectrum here of how reservations are. If you go down south, actually anybody who's ever looked at YouTube or anything might run into something called Brocket 99. Brocket is one of the reservations. There are other ones. I've seen some of these places, and it's bad all around. However, there are some other bands. Here we have, what is it, the Tsutina First Nation. They have actually tried to do something with their situation. They now run a couple of casinos. They are very prosperous. They bring in money. Now there's some internal politics that, you know, maybe the chiefs are taking too much and not distributing enough to the rest of their reserve. I can't speak to that because I'm not entirely sure of the politics of it. But yeah, there are some that prosper. There are some that don't. And as far as our history with them goes, we did have, if you remember my early Canadian history, we did have some not-so-nice interactions with them at first. It was pretty bloody, as I recall.
Which, unfortunately, seems to be a long-running
theme. Yeah, but unfortunately, and even these days, and this does kind of stick in my craw a little bit. It seems every time we get a new prime minister, the leader of the First Nations, the last one I remember was a gentleman by the name of Ovid Mercredi. It seems every time we get a new person in a position of political power, these guys come up and say, okay, congratulations, you're now the head of the country. Now, here's your initiation. You have to get up and you have to apologize to all the native people for everything that mm-hmm. your ancestors did to us hundreds of years ago. And it's right at that point where I realized that as far as any kind of resolution to anything, it's never going to happen. And because they always go back to it and say, you must apologize. Like, is anyone else seeing the welcome to the world thing that Seth did?
I don't recall. Yeah, I don't recall the piece off the top of my head, but we'll see about that one a little bit later. Thank you all, of course. We are about an hour into the show. We've got about another roughly half an hour to go. We'll see how long it takes to us. You're watching Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. We're talking about the dangers of the dissenting opinion. And I really wanted to couch stuff into starting off with what bad happens for the smaller guy, the persons who are on the outside of the majority, because it's the easiest one to see. There are numerous occasions where that kind of thing just happens, and sometimes don't even notice it because it happens all too often. But what I wanted to hit was specifically at this point, even though it's the smaller portion of the show, the last third or so, I wanted to hit the flip side of it, where the minority actually ends up changing the majority. And there are a couple of items that come to mind instantly. So before I hit the two or three that I've got, does anybody have, now that I've kind of almost sprung it on you guys, I'm hoping somebody was thinking about it a little bit more. Does anybody have an idea on a minority or minority position that changed the majority on a particular item? Because I got a couple of them right off the top of my head because, well, it's my topic, my theme, so I've had more time to think about it, I admit.
Well, historically, we've got plenty of examples, but at the same time, none of those were achieved quickly or easily.
No, it doesn't have to be.
And that's the big difference between the two, between the previous, where you have the majority against minority. You know, we see that all the time, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, the minority is the one that loses because numbers. But
wars of attrition.
Yeah. In the rare occasions, though we do see many of them throughout history, where the minority finally does win out and win the day, it's rarely, it never is an easy task, it is never a quick task, and it is never to the full, shall we say.
Yeah.
Here's that.
I can tell you one that I'm fighting right now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Are you okay over there?
Yeah. The minority opinion versus majority opinion in the U.S. Court system for custody of minor children. The majority opinion, believe it or not, is very sexist, and that is the children belong with their mother. Now, when I went to my court hearing, I fought a 3-year-long custody battle. And at the end of it, after all of the money that was spent, all the time off from work, all the emotional trauma to my child and to myself and to my family that was supporting me, my judge turned out to be quite very sexist. And I live in a state that supposedly, especially the county that I was in at the time of the custody battle, was somewhat progressive. And I'll give you an idea of the difference in terms of the progressive opinion versus the non-progressive opinion. If you go to Virginia, if you live in the state of Virginia, and you are a man and you have a child and you're fighting for custody of the child against the woman, marriage irregardless, okay? Married, non-married doesn't make a difference in this case. The courts will automatically grant custody of the child to the woman. No, I am not a woman hater. I'm stating facts right now. It is a 95% rate of the child being awarded custody to the mother. The mentality is, like I said, women are better caregivers. Now, The 5% where the men have been awarded custody are in extreme cases where either A, the mother has refused to take care of the child and being forced to tell the court over and over and over again that I don't want the child, I will not take care of the child, I don't care about the child, and in that case the child's been granted to the father. And other cases where the mother is currently locked up and incarcerated or is in drug rehab drugs or prostitution, whatever, those kinds of extreme cases are the 5% minority. There's very few cases where the man has won just by being a better parent and by providing a better home. Virginia is very nasty in that respect. Pennsylvania, my understanding, is not that far away from it. In Maryland, supposedly the man has an equal chance of winning custody by using a form that has to be completed by the judge to determine who has the better household environment for the child. Now, that being said, that was my case. I had many check marks in my favor versus her. At the end of 3 years, the judge made a statement of, I believe the child belongs with their mother. I turned to my attorney and I said, listen, we have to appeal this because this is wrong. And he said, good luck, because that particular judge plays golf with the appeals court judges.
Ouch.
And they don't tend to overturn his ruling. So basically, I got shafted by a sexist judge in a progressive state. And as far as the harm goes, I'm willing to state at this time that my son requires psychological and medical treatment for the emotional harm that his mother has been causing him over the last 5 years. So there are many, many cases throughout the entire United States of America where, no, it is obvious that the mother was not the better parent. No, that the mother's home was not the better place for the child to be. And it is a constant, ongoing battle. I do not believe that a mother, just because her body is wired for producing a child, makes her a better caregiver than a father. The scientific community and the APA, the American Psychologists Association, have actually shown that there is a mental capacity wired into the human brain that makes a person, whether they are male or female, that gives them better empathy and a better state of mind towards caring for children. The understanding, the compassion, all those wonderful human emotions that we predominantly and sexistly attribute to mostly women actually does exist in men almost on an equal state. But, you know, like I said, there's a lot of sexism, and it's a constant uphill battle. There are groups out there that have to fight this constantly. One of them is Fathers for Justice. They started in the United Kingdom fighting against legislation that was actually anti-men in terms of custody.
Okay, okay. Where you're getting at this point, I would much rather...
I'm on the dissent side of the... of the whole case.
No, I got you. I got you. But where this is going to end up is going to be placing us into talking more in the legal area than what I want to now and here. So I want to.
Right, but my point is that it doesn't matter if it's religion or legal doctrine or just even a state of mind, is that anywhere you go, whatever topic you find, you're going to find the majority viewpoint and then the minority viewpoint. And the minority viewpoint may have really good points in trying to change the majority, but it is a constant uphill battle.
And that is precisely the piece that I wanted to hit. I'm going to our northern friends, I'm going to hit you and see who wants to take this one on. The first person that I think of, the first situation that I think of the minority changing the majority, even if it's going to take a long time, Our 2014 Nobel Peace Prize winner. Which one of you wants to do the recap on that?
I love that girl. Malala, oh my God. That girl just leaves me speechless. The fact that she could stand up against the entire Taliban and you know, in a very polite manner as she does, basically say, screw you. And to even keep doing that after getting shot in the head is just incredible. Like, and I've watched a couple interviews with her. There are things coming out of that girl's mind that are decades and decades ahead of her age. Like, I don't know where she finds this, but the girl is incredible.
Yeah, Dallin?
I have to agree.
Can you properly pronounce her last name?
I think it's Yousefzai. I think. I've heard a few pundits on TV say it kind of like that.
So your feeling on her and what her influence is doing so far?
It's definitely it is a huge step in the right direction. I mean, what happened to her? I mean, the fact that these people went after her and tried to kill her for speaking out, and that she survived and is still able to continue to speak out to this day. It is my hope that it brings a ton of attention to the whole situation, and that it does. Well, it's like I said with, you know, some of the debates we've seen recently. I want to see a lot of this fundamentalism, a lot of this completely absurd, and I will say that word, absurd behavior, absurd customs, absurd religions, dragged kicking and screaming into the light of the mainstream so that it can be properly observed, ridiculed, marginalized, and eventually stamped out as it deserves to be. And I just, with her surviving and being able to continue to speak out and continue to doing what she's doing, she's working on getting her hooks into those fundamentalists so that we can start dragging them out and just saying, hey, world, wake up. These are the people that want to kill everybody. Let's poke fun at them. Like, let's show them just how absurd they are.
Yep. Joe, you are back center stage because you have a specialized skill set that some people would not particularly care for. One of which is the perspective of the area from which Malala Yousafzai, and by the way, to make sure that everybody's on board, Malala Yousafzai was, I forget if it was 14 or 15 years old, I believe it was 15, was in Pakistan on a public transport bus. Bus was stopped by extremists in the Taliban, which is a really, really freaky idea in and of itself. And was shot in the face because she was doing the unbelievable idea of, as a young lady, going to school to learn. Now that we've got the Cliff Note version of that, you've been out that area. Maybe not in her specific area, but you've been in the overall. What insight do you have, if any, as to culturally how is that minority personality going to resonate?
It depends on the particular region within that region, as silly as that sounds. But
no, it makes perfect sense.
Excuse me. Because there are a lot of regions throughout that section of the world that are a lot more progressive than people are willing to give them credit for. Baghdad, for example, post regime was a lot more progressive than you'd possibly consider. Now, historically speaking, we see less examples of progression from groups like from groups within, say, Afghanistan. I've been to both. But then again, you compare the two cultures. You look at, you know, central Iraq, where, you know, Hussein's power was most dominant, and
I didn't do it.
Oh, wait a minute.
I didn't do it. You can't prove anything.
Don't worry, Tech. Those are just fire engines.
Anyway, when you look at Iraq from that perspective, you have to take into consideration, you know, this particular population had just come out of the essential dark ages of a vicious dictatorship. So they were probably more open to the idea of, you know, more progressive thoughts and ideologies. Not necessarily the case over in Afghanistan, which is the closest I've been to Pakistan. So I can't necessarily speak directly as to the temperature of the culture in Pakistan. However, if it's anything like Afghanistan, you know, it's very little centralized government. So there's a lot of different pockets all over the place. And, you know, having been one of those people who actually sat down every now and then and actually had dinner with the locals, as crazy as it may sound, I did speak with them, and I did get to know some of them, and I did get to know their opinions of, you know, not just current events, but the world in general. And I'll tell you, you know, discussing not politics but philosophies with a village elder, you know, somebody who's never even seen an iPhone, let alone, or, you know, a cell phone, let alone an iPhone or anything like that, you begin to broaden your perspective a lot. But my personal take on this is that the people in general recognize that the system there is broken, that it's just not working, and that if they are going to continue in the world as it continues to grow and evolve, they have to come out of that mindset. They have to come out of that fixated position of, well, these are the rules that we have had since time immemorial, and these are what we have to stick by. In other words,
they have to evolve with the world.
Well, yes. They are gradually, and some of them more so than faster than others, but they are gradually beginning to recognize that maybe these other folks have a point. Unfortunately, while the general population has this feeling, we're again dealing with minority versus majority, except in the reverse. Whereas in the U.S., everybody's pretty much on a level. We try to put everybody on a level playing field. And at that point, you know, the minority typically loses out to the majority based on, you know, just numbers. Over there, good example. When Al-Qaeda had major control of the Afghanistan population, did the people of Afghanistan share the views of these extremists? No, very few of them actually did. But this was a case of the majority in a negative light being overpowering, or the minority of a negative light overpowering the majority through force rather than, you know, debate and discussion. And, you know, even to this day, there are groups out there that are still purporting these old "we must stay the course" mentalities that, you know, look at where they've gotten us so far.
You know, funny enough, what you just said is actually we're going to end up springboarding my closing in a couple of moments. Tech, I'm gonna hit you one more time over here because we got to see about wrapping up. Were there anything you wanted to flesh out, chime in further on, or bring to the table on this one also before we wrap this all together? As far as to a minority affecting the majority in some way.
Yeah, I see. Now, the folks that are watching this should understand that because of my situation with my son and the custody and everything else, whenever I see something on television or read it in the news or on Reddit or, you know, so something posted on the internet about some parent going absolutely batshit crazy and harming their children or their ex-spouse or whatever the case might be, It does affect me as much as it affects the country. The more cases that are publicly announced of, we hear plenty about men going bonkers and killing their other loved one in the midst of a emotional custody battle or something horrible, you know, cheating or whatever. But you don't really hear about the other side so much. And when you do hear about the other side, I tend to go and look for the comments on it. And I like to see how people are responding to it. And for the most part, I do see a lot of what makes me hopeful. I see a lot of comments that make me very hopeful for the country in terms of balancing out the concept of how to determine which parent is best suited for raising the child or multiple children. But at the same time, I see a lot of pushback in the comment sections of people going, no, you know, it's either sexist comments of, well, women are designed here, people, to raise children, or, you know, they make comments that they're not qualified to make, like, oh, there was obviously something mentally wrong with the with that parent and that they should not be used to as an example. It's like, no, actually they should be used as an example. It's like Malala. She is an example of what happens to hundreds of thousands of young girls and women in the world. So when I see Malala winning a prize, the Peace Prize, I don't see her as a single individual winning that prize. I see all the women who didn't survive the assault winning that prize. And so when I see somebody speaking up about how the father should have been in care because it was obvious that the mother was obviously not in the correct mindset to care for the children, I see not one person speaking up. I see lots of people speaking up. I see lots of fathers being encouraged to continue to fight the battles. There's a forum I'm part of single fathers that have been abused by their spouses, that their children are not in the best care right now. And all it takes is one person to speak up and go, you know, I was in your position, but I fought for 10 years. And when my child came up to me and they told me that they understood how much that they were doing for them and everything else, a bunch of other men in the forum suddenly, you know, they've changed their mindset. They're going to keep staying the course. They're going to keep fighting all the little battles that they need for their children. And it's like this with Malala. She happened to have widespread support all throughout the world. So maybe one person like her, who represents so many that couldn't be here today, will be able to make that positive impact on that majority overseas about how women should be educated, and change that opinion to, yeah, they should be educated just like every man.
And know? I think that is actually the perfect spot right there. Just to lead that run off. Seriously. One of the things that I wanted to hit before we take a leave of everybody is something that has started here in the U.S. in the last, I don't even know. I'm going to call it 10 years. Is it really 10 years? I don't know. But there is something that has been yelled and screamed about. And it's not going to seem like it makes sense at first, but give me a couple of seconds. Something that has been yelled and screamed about in many circles. Some are considered news. Some are considered propaganda. The war on Christmas. Now, like I said before, give me just a couple of seconds of leeway on this.
There is no war.
There are many people, several organizations, that go ahead and they say that there is a war on Christmas. There is a decided attempt to try to secularize what should otherwise be one of the most grand religious expressions in the entirety of the year. And I've actually been unfriended and blocked by somebody who knew me on Facebook, knew me from high school, because I questioned this exact same kind of idea by asking at one point, how is it that 70% of the population, 70+% of the population, can be bullied by 10% of the population? How is that even possible here in the United States, when just by sheer numbers alone, any legislation could be passed to say, basically, stifu. For those of you that don't know what stifu is, just look it up.
STFU.
But there is a real-world example where a majority can be bullied by a decided minority to be forced to do exactly what the minority want them to do. It was called apartheid. Some of you might have heard of it. It was arguably one of the blackest, and I say that with no reservation, and I don't give a care one way or the other what people want to say about my use of the term in this case. One of the blackest marks on humanity. For those of you that don't remember it, really quickly, it was a decided minority of Caucasian people who subjugated hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions, of dark-skinned humans. Call them black, call them Negro, whatever you want to call them. The point of it was, at the pointy end of the barrel of a gun, many, many more times of population were subjugated and were had laws enforced upon them that kept them downtrodden, kept them powerless by a very, very minority. Here in the United States, where 70+% 75+% of the population is of one specific mindset, and 15% is the dissenting opinion. For you to go ahead and say that we 15%, we 10%, are the ones who are completely ripping you apart and making you cry boo-hoo because we're the ones who are subjugating you and oppressing you? How is that even possible? There's only two possible ways. One is at the pointy end of a sword, the business end of a gun, by force, if not of will, but of deadly lethal force, the only other possible way, the only other way, is if they have the power of the law behind them, and they've been right all this time. As we get on further into the year, there will be yelling and screaming about oppression, about people being told you're not allowed to do something. I challenge any of you to find a version of Kent State happening where there is a menorah involved, where there is a Festivus pole involved, where there is a manger scene involved. Come back and tell me that that is happening, and I will grant you, I will go publicly and admit, yes, you know what? There is oppression, and I will stand with you right in the front, 100%. But until that point, you got to really question your motives. You have to really question which of those possibilities it is. Is it
that I agree you with think, you, Susan.
Is it that you have just got your feelings hurt because somebody kicked your puppy, like I mentioned last week? Or is it just that you are, as Joe mentioned, getting pulled, dragged, kicking and screaming the entire way into the 21st century? Thank you all for taking the time to be with us tonight. I know a lot of the things that we've talked about have rackled feathers. I understand that. That's part of the reason I'm doing this. To look at, to examine, to question. And maybe to get a better idea of what the why of the whole thing is all about. That's what it's all for. So before we sign off, I want to make a real quick mention to Cash, who was not able to be with us tonight for whatever reason. We're with you, buddy. We're with you. We're pulling for you, and we're hoping the best. However your show turns out, just know full well, you've got family out here that are hoping the best for you. And Ashley, even though you weren't joining us tonight, your seat's still here. You've got family, too. As always, I would like to thank the panelists. Joe, thank you very much for your time this evening.
No problem.
Unrenowned Tech, thank you very much for not mentioning the Amish Wolverine once tonight.
I thought I'd leave that in your care. But, glad to be here. It was fun. I actually enjoyed it, as usual.
Dallin, thank you for your time, of course, as always.
Always a pleasure, and as I always say, especially even tonight, when it comes to things like dissenting voices or voices of any kind, the best thing you can be is not silent. If you are a dissenting voice, you are getting pressured. The only thing you can do, damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead, keep it up.
I will not go quietly into the night.
Preach on, brother!
Independence Day?
Yeah.
Yes, and of course it's nice to know that we have people like Batman in our corner. Heretic Woman, thank you for your time especially. And, you know, more power to you, hon. Thank you for doing the jobs that you're doing.
Well, thank you. It's been great. You guys do a good job too, and I'm very happy you asked me to join you.
No worries. In a strange way, I need to make a last item thank you to Cash for a different reason. And I don't know about anybody else, but we've been fortunate enough over on the show to have had Cash on with us. The guys from The Scathing Atheist, Noah, Heath, Lucinda. And I'm going to see about getting Lucinda back. Sam Mulvey from Ask an Atheist, who I also want to get back. And, of course, Cash. And I don't know if you're going to get to see this, Cash. I really hope that you do, you and Professor Steven. Because in a strange, twisted kind of way, you have unintentionally, I feel, started a circle, a conglomeration of various podcasters, and in this case, vlogcasters, who are kind of orbiting around with you, who are starting to intermingle with each other, with Heretic Woman, with Dave Foda, with a couple of the other guys. And we are starting to ping pong back and forth with each other in a way that I did not expect. I am starting to actually feel like there is a community that this vlogcast is part of now. And I have you specifically to thank for that. I don't know how the rest of us all feel about it, but in a way, you're helping, you have helped some of us start to intermingle. And that will only bring more strength later. So thank you. Unintentionally, you are making a bigger, stronger, more vibrant community. Even if you do nothing else, you've done something good. So thank you.
And if we can help Cash, you let us know.
Yes, absolutely. We know full well that this is not a sexy vlogcast. This takes a little bit of getting used to, and it takes some going through to really understand a lot of what happens. So for those of you that have made it all the way through, of course, thank you. It means a great deal to us that you would even consider, because let's face it, some of these topics take a lot of unpacking, and we can't promise to have all of the answers. As a matter of fact, that's kind of our thing. We don't go for the answers. We go between where the question ends and where the answers begin to really understand why does it even matter. So if you've followed along with us so far tonight, thank you. It really means a lot, and we hope that you've gotten something out of it. As always, if you would like to chime in, if you'd like to send messages off our way, please, by all means, send those emails over to me, shujintribble@gmail.com. Please put holy crap in the subject line. If you would like to be a panelist for our next Power of 10 episode, that will be coming up next week, which will be November 2nd Eastern Time. At this point, Dallin, it does not look like you're going to be joining us probably, you said, right?
I would actually like to optimistically say just Tech reminded me tonight of one possibility. Some of you know I'm moving at the end of the week. I am moving at the end of the week. I cannot say for certain if I'll even have an internet connection. However, I do have technology. So might not be in my wonderful palatial setting that I'm in right now, but I do want to join.
You can always set it to audio only to reduce bandwidth if you're worried about if you have a bandwidth limitation of how much data you can consume in a month. So you can switch it over to audio, and that will actually reduce your consumption.
You know, there's one nice thing. I was checking the specials. This was about a year ago on my cell provider. I got myself locked into a 6 gig per month plan, and because of their contractual obligation, it gets grandfathered in even after the offer's expired. Bandwidth isn't a big concern to me right now.
Well, it's nice. It's nice to know. All right. So, again, if you'd like to be part of the next Power of 10, please, by all means, feel free. If you'd like to leave a voicemail message or send a text message, please, by all means, feel free. The phone number for that, again, is 859-HCTV. 554. And as another item, those of you that might be looking to get me friended over on Facebook, of course, you can find me over there easy enough under the name Shujin Tribble, but please send me a message to let me know that you're catching me from Holy Crap, because there are some that have come through that I'm not quite sure who you are. So let me know, just to be on the safe side. I have gotten some weird ones in the past. Some people that were Catholic denominations that wanted to talk to me about our Lord and Savior Cthulhu or whatever it was, and I just want to make sure that I do it right.
Did they want to touch your noodly appendage?
Fortunately not. But Of course.
Oh, no.
You don't say that with enough conviction. I think you were secretly hoping.
If the flying spaghetti monster doesn't exist, then why does DNA look like Fusilli pasta? Checkmate, atheists.
Yes, which means that
if the flying spaghetti monster didn't exist, why do all plants look surprisingly like meatballs? Mm-hmm.
Look at it this way. If that's the case, then the Italians are the chosen people, and I, as one who is hairy all the way down my back, am one of them. No.
I'm Italian too.
I will not shave my back, and those of you that want to go ahead and lop off other pieces of your anatomy, feel free. It's your body to choose as you wish. But regardless,
you can get to choose.
It's time for us to go ahead and get on out of here. So as always, everybody, thank you very much for your time. We really, really do appreciate it. And again, we hope that you've gotten something worthwhile out of this all. As always,
STDs don't count.
As always, before we get out, I always say my goodnights for all of you. And I say my goodnights for my lady, too. Because 9.5 years on, I am still in love. Matane Fujin. I love you and I miss you. And dream of me. And for all of you, before we get out, Halloween is fast approaching. If you're driving at night, please be exceedingly careful to watch overpasses. If you see people walking on an overpass at night now, please be careful. There are a lot of groups of teenagers especially who will decide it's fun to start throwing jack-o'-lanterns over the edge. Please be careful. If you see anything, call a local constabulary one way or another and let somebody know. Because an impact of a jack-o'-lantern at highway speeds is deadly.
And you don't have to call the police directly. You can call 911 if you're in the U.S., that is, because that is an appropriate call. That is an emergency. Well, you will not get in trouble for using 911 to report somebody possibly throwing a pumpkin over an overpass, because they know what happens.
And Dallin, 911 is also emergency services on your side of the border too, right?
It is, and right. I do believe it can be used in the same situation.
I would agree with that.
Why do I suddenly feel like Rick Mercer is about to pop up and saying, "Congratulations, Canon, on getting 911"?
As a matter of fact, you know what? Keep that in mind. We will talk about not exactly Rick Mercer, but I think we should have it out about the stereotypes that we've got on both sides. We really hashed it out properly.
I think we should just call that episode "Lock and Load."
Canadian sniper.
There you go.
So now that we've got that as a kind of attack for, I don't know, which episode it will be. For all of you, of course, thank you for your time. Until the next time we get together, everyone, thank you for your time. And of course, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap of Logcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+ pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.